You're listening to IMO with Tom Jackson, part of the Wednesday afternoon show. It's the news, but not as you know it. Yes, of course, it's IMO. My favourite segment, which is definitely not because I'm hosting it. It's where I take news from all across the interwebs, put them on a piece of paper, and ask you your opinion. IMO, of course, stands for In My Opinion, because that is what the show is all about, funnily enough. So what have we got to talk about this particular week? Well, we have the worrying situation about bananas. We could run out of bananas in the near future. Who'd have thunk it? We've also got a monster iceberg, which is about the size of a quarter of Wales, which has fallen off the Antarctic. So we're going to be talking about that and where that's heading. Hopefully not into a cruise ship. That would be a bit bad. And we're also going to be talking about a recent report that has been published from the Local Governments Association, which has said that local councils are better at bringing up underperforming schools than academy chains, which is just a very interesting topic to talk about. If you have any opinions, you can, of course, contact us via social media at Vectis Radio on Twitter and Facebook. You can also send us a text using the number 60777, starting that message with BR6TT. We've got Cool and the Gang now, and we will be back with our first story. The first story that I want to talk about, I think, is very important. It's very important. It's no joking matter. There is a serious problem with the amount of bananas that are available to the people of this world at this particular moment. It is a very serious issue, and I wouldn't want to hear any kind of joking about that. So, yes, we may run out of bananas in the near future. Why is that? Well, most of the bananas we eat are all from the same variety, and this particular variety has been discovered to be vulnerable to a type of disease. Now, what that means is that if there is an outbreak of this disease that it is vulnerable to, all of them will very easily die, which could mean we are bananaless, which is a travesty, in my humble opinion. That is a travesty. I wouldn't be able to live without bananas. But there could be a saviour. There could be a saviour to this potential banana-based catastrophe. Now, that's something I didn't expect to say this morning. There is a very, very endangered type of banana from Madagascar that could be the key to recovering bananas as a fruit. And the reason that this could be helpful is that this Madagascan variation of the fruit has grown and evolved in isolation on the island of Madagascar, and it could potentially have some unique properties that scientists are hoping they can crossbreed into the other types of banana, which would potentially make them stronger or potentially immune to this disease that they are currently vulnerable to. And I thought this was an incredibly interesting thing, because we do hear a lot about endangered animals and endangered species, such as tigers and polar bears and stuff like that. But we don't really hear it about plants, which is very, very interesting. I would have weirdly expected there to be potentially more of a threat to plants than there were to, I don't know, actually. But that struck me as very interesting. And the question that I want to ask anybody listening is, I'm going to preface this by saying I do eat a lot of bananas, and I do not know what I would do without them. And, like, I would be lost if all these bananas went. So my question to anybody listening is, what food could you not live without? What food could you just, you wouldn't be able to cope if you didn't have that food? Let us know. You can let us know on social media, on Twitter and Facebook at Vectis Radio. You can also send us a text to 60777, starting that message with BR6TT. We've got Sigrid now, and we will be back in just a moment with our next story. This is IMO with Tom Jackson, part of the Wednesday afternoon show. It's the news, but not as you know it. The next story that I wanted to talk about was a report that has recently been released by the Local Government Association, and they commissioned research into how well struggling schools improve under academy chains versus how well they improve under local councils. And they've brought up some interesting results, as the results were published relatively recently. Now, so under changes implemented in 2016, all schools deemed inadequate by Ofsted, the school's regulator, have to become part of an academy chain, as the local authority is seen to be unable to sort it out. Now, they did a study and they looked at loads of schools that were deemed inadequate in 2013, I believe it was, and then they compared how they were then to how they were now. And so they found that 152 had stayed with the local authority and 212 had become sponsored academies. And most of the... And so, some of the leftover ones were either closed or taken over by other schools. By December 2017, this is the interesting bit. By December 2017, so that was only about half a year ago, all 152 of the local authority schools had been reinspected, and 115, which is 75% of those, were rated good or outstanding. And out of the 212 sponsored academy schools, 155 had been reinspected. And of those, just 92, which is about 59.4% of the academy ones, were rated good or outstanding. Now, the interesting thing that's brought up by this is that these results imply that local councils have actually done a much better job at improving failing schools than academy chains, which is very strange considering the push to make schools academies. Now, I've relatively kind of sat on the fence, to be honest, on the academy versus council issue, because it's kind of a two-edged sword, I imagine. Because on the one hand, reports like this show that local authorities can really benefit struggling schools, whereas on the other hand, that such like a responsibility for lots and lots of schools may be potentially a financial burden on the council that is better suited to be dealt with by a separate academy chain. And so that's kind of why it was interesting, and I really wanted to share that because it just kind of made me think. And because we have had a couple of examples of academy-run schools not going particularly well. For example, the whole situation with Sandow Bay Academy, which has now thankfully been resolved. But the question that I kind of had was, how different do you think island schools would be if they were still under the control of the council? And more generally, do you think it should be academies all the way or local councils all the way or a bit of both? We'd love to hear what you're thinking. You can contact us via social media at Vectis Radio on Twitter and Facebook. You can also send us a text to 60777, starting that message with BR6TT. We've got some local music now from Jet Harris, and then we'll be back with our next song. You're listening to IMO with Tom Jackson, part of the Wednesday Afternoon Show. It's the news, but not as you know it. I wanted to move on to our next little itty-bitty story, because we are coming up to the end of the hour shockingly fast. And it was kind of, today's Wednesday the 11th of July, and what is particularly brilliant about this day is that it is the World Cup semi-final in which England have managed to get to, which is an amazing feat considering their track record. But the whole country has really united behind this cause, and it's really amazing to see. And there have been some amazing ways that people have shown support. And a kind of a trend that seems to have happened is that people have been putting the St. George flag in all sorts of weird places. One of the ones that I see on a more regular basis, there's the scaffolding outside M&S in Cowes. That has the St. George flag on it, and recently they've added It's Coming Home. Of course it is, on a bit of kind of poster on the side. But the one that I find most amazing is that the Union Jack Columbine Building in East Cowes is now the St. George Flag Columbine Building in East Cowes, and it could potentially be the world's biggest, well, I think it's at least the country's biggest St. George flag. Now, after all that wittering on, what's the question, Tom? What's the question? Well, how are you celebrating England getting into the semi-final, and what are your plans for watching the football this afternoon? Gorillaz now. We'll be back in a second with our last story. This is IMO with Tom Jackson, part of the Wednesday Afternoon Show. It's the news, but not as you know it. Moving on to actually the final story that I want to talk about. We are coming up to the end of the hour. Surprisingly quickly, is a monster iceberg. Yes, that's a thing. It's not the latest Pixar movie. It's a real thing. It's a monster iceberg. It's not Monsters, Inc. That's very different. This iceberg is about the size of a quarter of Wales. So divide Wales into four. That's one iceberg, according to this. And it has fallen... it has fallen off the Antarctic. And the question is, well, where is it now? The iceberg has actually been moving incredibly slowly, even by iceberg standards, from the Antarctic. It's kind of pretty much basically where it was when it separated. And the reason for that is because it's very difficult for it to be carried by winds because of its size. And scientists say that eventually sea currents will pick up the berg. It's like we're on first name terms with an iceberg. It's a bit weird calling it a berg, but I'm going to keep going with that. So if currents catch hold of the berg, it will get going and start moving. Now, something that I just thought I'd throw in there is that the biggest iceberg ever is referred to as B15, and it was 11,000 square kilometres big. And now, just to compare that to this one that is more recent, the recent one is 5,800 square kilometres. So that's like just over half, I'd say, of the biggest iceberg in the world. So the sizes are just amazingly, like, incomprehensibly big. And I just thought that was interesting. And this largest iceberg in the world, B15, at 11,000 square kilometres, split from the Antarctic in 2000, and parts of it are still actually roaming the oceans of the world, which I thought was quite interesting. I believe there's... there's part of it off... I think there's part of it drifting by a British overseas territory somewhere. I'm not exactly sure which one, but there is a chunk of this massive iceberg near there, which is a fun sight to see, I guess. But the question I had on this, why I brought it up, I wanted to ask the question, why has so little been done on global warming-y type stuff? Because that was very much a very, very particularly important issue in the past few years, and now everybody seems to have forgotten that it's happening, and it's still a problem, and it's still just plodding along fine. I feel like we need to kind of refocus on that, because that's something we've kind of forgotten about, and it is very much getting worse the longer we wait. But that, of course, is my opinion. I'd love to hear yours. You can contact us on Twitter and Facebook at Vectis Radio. You can also send us a text to 60777, starting that message with BR6TT. It's currently 2:04, and Laura will be talking to some wonderful people to do with ability dogs in the next hour. And to take us there, we have some Queen. Thanks so much for listening. If you're liking what you're hearing, tune in live to the Wednesday afternoon show on Vectis Radio from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. We hope to see you there.